You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, that was a soccer game that our own Ori, the New York Yankees fan in the room, can appreciate because essentially the crew needed a couple of solo home runs from Lucas Zelaya to pull off a comeback 2-1 win over New York City FC, the team that would have been playing in Yankee Stadium, but right now they're homeless. They are not first priority at Yankee Stadium, as it were. You know, it was exciting to win, obviously. They were world-class strikes by Lucas, but we got a lot of problems. We got a lot of problems we need to work out. And one of those is that hoping that you'll like and subscribe to the Massive Report podcast. So please do that. Ori's here, Murph, Alex. I'm Brian Phillips, and that's it. Everybody else has deserted us this week. Fortunately, Ori's here to read the Saucy Brewworks copy.
I'm always here to do that. Yeah, I said we were going to be there for this week, but of course, a big J journalist here lying. But yeah, Saucy Brewworks is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brewworks. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Check them out online and buy their stuff. We'll hopefully be there next week to record our last podcast before this big 3-week break upcoming in the MLS season.
I'm beginning to question if we'll ever be there.
I think we will.
We'll get there eventually.
Of course. They're ready to have us, and we're excited to be there, and hopefully we can make that happen next week before the international break, which is a long one, but a welcome one for Columbus Crew, because I think just after the furious schedule of the last few weeks, the injuries that have kind of come and gone, a team that has often looked tired, I think they'll benefit greatly from the break and hopefully some good hard work on the training ground. Because Ori, our attack looks dull and unimaginative.
Those are
New York City seems to have in that match a pretty easy time of letting us have a good portion of the field and then just stopping us right on the top of the box. What was it that we were or were not doing?
I would say you said it best right there, saying unimaginative. I think that's the key word right now. There's just such a lack of creativity in the crew offensively. You can see how one-dimensional they are with how much the attacks go through the right side with Aful and especially Luis Diaz. And through these first six games, you've just kind of seen that right side is not really yielding anything because Luis Diaz is still doesn't have the finished cross, doesn't have the finished shot. Zardes is not getting good runs in. And I think at the same time, Jordan Angeli pointed this out in the broadcast, I'm pretty sure, not having Milton Valenzuela is a big hindrance to having more creativity in the attack because Waylon Francis has played really well in his stead at left back, but Waylon Francis, obviously a little bit more of a defensive left back, doesn't have the same kind of attacking, overlapping run style that Milton Valenzuela has. So you see more stuff on the right side. And at the same time, I said this throughout the game on Twitter, and, just was thinking this too. And Pat mentioned this as soon as the season started after the Philly draw. Zelrayan is a marked man in open play. They're going to get 2-3 defenders on him every single game. Forget about it. Now teams fouling the crew outside the box now after what he did against New York City with those 2 free kick goals. They'll be lucky to get another free kick this season if teams scout them well. But you need to be able to have somebody that can step in for Zelarayan and be creative in the middle of the field. You need Pedro Santos to step up. He's not had a very good start to this MLS season. I think you give somebody else a looking at that right wing spot, whether it's Etienne, Matan. Hopefully you'll get Kevin Molino pretty soon after this break. But you need some more creativity and a little bit more ingenuity in the crew offense right now because we're 6 games through the season. And there's still no open play goals for this team from one of their own players. 3 Lucas free kicks and 2 DC own goals. And they have 8 points. So that's pretty good for having not scored an open play goal this season.
Yeah, I did notice at the DC United game because of where I was situated in the South End that, man, that the play is just almost entirely on the right side. And it makes us predictable, doesn't it, Murph?
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, you're just not getting – the production level from those players. You know, I think you can understand wanting Harrison Offel and Luis Diaz to kind of dictate the offense, especially in games we've seen recently when Lucas Zelarayan isn't out there. But yeah, I mean, awful was, no pun intended, but actually pun fully intended, was pretty awful on Saturday. He obviously gave the ball away that led to the goal, but just gave very little, you know, especially in the first half offensively. And Luis Diaz, I've talked about it a lot. He just, whatever he had that first year where, you know, he was driving at defenses, he was shooting, you know, now I don't know if it's been a focus in practice that he needs to put in these crosses, but it's just so predictable and they're not finding the target. We talked a lot last week about how I thought, and I think we all kind of agreed that practice time would help. I think it did a little bit, but I think, you know, you expect it's not like there's a new forward that Luis Diaz is looking for, right? It's Jossy Zardes. It's the same guy who he's played the ball to the last couple of years. You know, now teams are obviously adjusting to the crew because the crew won MLS Cup and were a good attacking team last year, but you know, the runs aren't as there, as strong as they usually are, and they're not connecting from the left or the right. So yeah, it's concerning because, you know, as great as it was to see them get that win and, you know, dramatic fashion and two great free kicks, you know, and I wrote about this today, you need other guys to be scoring goals. And the fact that they haven't, you know, like Ori said, it's a credit to them for having 8 points at this point in the season, because this offense looks pretty anemic and out of ideas.
Alex, I look to you to panic if we need to panic. You're an emotional guy. Should we be panicking right now?
No, I don't think so. Right. I actually, you know, first of all, the game sucked, right? Other than Lucas, it was a bad performance. It was lethargic. Team looked hungover. They've looked hungover basically the entire season so far. It's not even like Zardes isn't putting away the chances. There aren't chances for Zardes to put away. It's just not been great. But, you know, we're early on in an MLS season. You know, if this was literally any other league in the world, yeah, maybe you start to panic a little bit. But you can be mediocre in MLS and make it to the playoffs and then get hot at the right time and win another MLS Cup. So yeah. I'm not hitting the panic button just yet. I think the interesting thing for me about all of this has been the tactics really haven't changed, right? It's not like we're playing some different style. It's not like we replaced a bunch of players in the off season and we're doing a 4-4-2 instead of a 4-2-1-2 or whatever. Like, all of that is staying the same. It's the same playbook from last season. It's just not working this season. That makes me think that it can start working again if players just start to find their form a little bit. So, you know, I definitely echo what was said about Milton. I think that's a huge loss. I think that from a midfield standpoint, the guys just aren't looking that sharp. And then again, on the wings, you know, it's a little bit of a mess. So I think just with a couple players kind of starting to find their feet a little bit in the season, we'll start to create a little bit more chances. And then I have no doubt that Zardes will finish those chances. But it's been a weird season so far. And thank God for Lucas, because if not for him, like, we would have lost that game. He was the only bright spot in that entire game.
There's one other bright spot. That's Eloy Room, who continues
to
make key saves. And I'm more concerned about the defense, because that was and has been a strength of this team. And Ori, we give away more counterattacking opportunities, give up a goal in the first half. It was not a great moment for this club. What do you see defensively that we're not doing that we were doing?
I think just
won the cup.
Yeah, I think the transition defense is kind of what you're seeing here. I mean, we talked about the set piece defense because the two goals they conceded against Toronto were set pieces. The goal they conceded against New England came from a quick free kick. But in this instance against New York City, and you saw them struggle with this throughout the course of the first half, they just couldn't get in good positions in the transition when New York City was countering. And you saw Harrison Offal cheat towards the middle of the field to play almost like a third center back. The fullbacks were playing very forward. Mensah was practically in a right back position when they were trying to pass out the back and get something out of that. But Afful was cheating towards the middle of the field. That left Thor Aronson wide open on his side. He had all the space in the world to do whatever he wanted. He had all the space in the world to run towards the box and get a nice, easy pass in for Tajuri Shradi, who just had a simple finish down in the corner. I mean, you look at the goal, the Afful giveaway was big. But also something that was happening throughout the course of the match, Artur was always one step behind the runners in the middle. He did not have, I think, his best performance in a crew shirt last Saturday at Red Bull Arena. I think Artur, you saw him, just was a little bit behind the New York runners coming to the middle of the field, because, and that's something that I think the way that New York City scored that first goal, I think you want to see more of that from the Columbus crew. And that's something that we were talking about last season. There isn't enough of these runs where guys are coming from the middle, or with the wingers who are cheating towards the middle of the field, if it's not on their side, making runs right outside the 18 yard box to try and get some shots in. We started seeing more shots in the second half. Pedro Santos had a nice rip of a shot. Nagby had a good opportunity trying to finesse it from outside the box. You need more of those to be able to get the defense out of position, because all you're doing with this slow buildup, moving it to the right side, you're just letting every defense in the league position itself correctly. And all they have to do is stay disciplined for 90 minutes. And that's why you can keep clean sheets against the Columbus crew. But while the defense has been worse than it was last year, because last year this team had what, 7 or 8 clean sheets in the first 10 MLS games, they've only conceded 5 goals within 6 games, which is still not too shabby when you look at the rest of the league. I mean, right now in the Eastern Conference, the team that has the best defense is Orlando City, just 2 goals conceded in 6 games.
Well, you bring up Artur Murphy. He's not 100%, is he?
No, he's definitely not. And I still think that despite having a week to kind of get healthy, get some rest, you know, I think that's affecting all of these guys, you know, guys we've talked about, him, Darlington Nagby, even Giassi to some degree. I know it's a shoulder injury, which you don't think of as kind of slowing a guy down. But, you know, that if that thing hurts every time he's running, you know, moving your shoulder the way you do when you run. Yeah, that could be a hindrance. But I think to Ori's point about Artur being a step behind a little bit, you know, that when you're dealing with, I think it's a groin injury that he's managing, and he discussed that, you know, it's something that's going to bother him. You know, usually it's after games and whatnot, but it's going to cause issues during games as well until it gets healthy. And, you know, that 3-week break, I think, will help with that. But yeah, I think a lot of these guys are dealing with, you know, stuff like that. It's unfortunate the way that this season has started, that they've dealt with so many injuries. You know, another guy that we keep not talking about, but would definitely help this attack right now is Kevin Molino. You know, yes. We're talking about a guy who can serve a ball and create, open up space for Zellerayan when he is getting, you know, double teamed or not allowing them to double team. You know, that's a guy that they can't get back fast enough. So, you know, and by get back, I mean get at all, because we haven't even seen him yet. I do think getting Perry Kitchen back will help as well, just to kind of give you another guy in that midfield that isn't just Nagby and Artur. And, you know, then you kind of go from there. And, you know, I think you see better performances after that. And I do think this was, you know, as much as we're going to criticize, I do think this was a step in the right direction. You know, obviously they won on the road, which is something that this team hadn't done since the end of the 2019 season. I think Ori told me beforehand, 15 games on the road that without a true road game, without a win, which I looked up is not even in the top 5 of all time road winless streaks in MLS history. So, you know, they weren't that bad, but you know, you go on the road, New York City is a good team, and you know, you're able to get out of there with a win. I think in MLS, you kind of take it any way you can get. Definitely concerns. And I think we've touched on a lot of them, but you know, 3 points is 3 points. And I know there's a number of other days that we've sat on this podcast and talked about, wow, they really should have won that game on the road. This game, maybe they didn't deserve to win it, but that's why you pay Lucas that money, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's brag on Lucas a little bit more, Alex. He's already halfway to the MLS free kick goal record, and these were not cheapies. I always look at the goalie, and if the goalie just can't react to what he's not seeing, then you know that it's a world-class strike, and we saw 2 of them.
Yeah, although Sean Johnson not reacting to shots is not the most uncommon thing in history.
But who's gonna get either one of those?
I think you're right. I just allow me that moment to focus on Sean there. You know, I just try to sneak it in there. No, but in all seriousness, I think Lucas Zellerayan is one of the best players that's ever put on a crew jersey. Technically, he is simply phenomenal. I think that, you know, not just the free kicks, but his entire play, the fact that they need to put 3 guys on him and then he still sneaks away from him somehow, like 85% of the time, is unbelievable to me. He is worth every penny of what they're paying him. And, you know, I think he's got a number of years left in the tank where he can really kind of contribute to this team. You know, he's someone who, kind of like Higuain, but even maybe a little bit more so, kind of sees what's about to happen before it actually transpires and can kind of make sure that he's in the right spot, make sure that he gets the ball to the right spot at the right time. And he's just a handful. He creates space for other guys because he's kind of dominating everything and you have to swarm him just to keep him from cutting you wide open. So I can't say enough good things about him. He is one of those players that, you know, I don't even know how you describe it. If you think about it in like the terms of Italian soccer, you know, he's kind of your the guy who's going to wear the armband and wear the number 10 shirt and he's going to drive everything. He's just a very, very, very special player. In my eyes, he's better than Scalotto. And I think that's about as high praise as you can say for anybody who's in the role that he's in.
Well, it's almost getting to the point with Zellerayan that, are they underpaying for him? I mean, you know, you look at some of the other designated, you know, big time designated players in this league and what they've accomplished in their time. I mean, he's, you know, you mentioned the free kick record, Brian. Giovinco had that a few years ago. I know we've kind of compared these two in terms of what they're able to do. You know, I mean, he's on that level, if not, you know, he's a little bit younger, I think, than when Giovinco first came to the league. I could be wrong on that. But you know, he's still a youngish player, 28, 29. So, you know, you still got years ahead of him. I mean, the stuff that he's able to do, and it's not just this game, obviously, you know, you think about back to the Monterrey home leg and the way he set up that goal, you know, just the effort it took to win that ball back, and not give up on the play, things like that, that, you know, maybe aren't the fanciest of plays, but, you know, got you a result in that game. So, yeah, I mean, he's just a complete player. You know, it's tough to rank Scalotto, Higuain, and anyone who's really played that position at that level for me. But, you know, it's hard for me to argue with Alex on that statement. You know, just because I think that there's so much more that Zellerayan will be able to do. Scalotto was late in his career. Higuain never won an MLS Cup. You know, so we'll see what happens. But Zellerayan, you know, for just over a season of play, it has been a remarkable signing.
And I think when you look at the number 10s in MLS history, right, just people who play that kind of three-quarter attacking midfield, trequartista kind of role, you know, he's up there with the very best of them. I mean, really, there are very few players who are comparable. He's just an unbelievable talent, and, you know, credit to our scouting team who found him and identified that, because I mean, Atlanta shell out a bunch of money for top talent, and, you know, we got top talent for a lot less money, but it's comparable to the kind of talent that Atlanta signed regularly. So, really, really great signing.
And an intangible here is he seems happy. He seems to be having a great time. I don't get the idea that he feels like, well, I should be in a bigger league, or I should be here, or I should be there. It seems like he's really having fun, and we're having fun watching him. And the league is as well, as he's the MLS player of the week. So he kind of checks all the boxes this week. Ori, you're the tactical guy in this podcast. And I was thinking after the match on Saturday that at some point our lives at the top of the box are going to become a lot easier, because you literally cannot, with Lucas on the field, you have to stop fouling us and you have to back off. And obviously some of that they have to take in is who's the center rep and so forth. But don't you start to see space starting to clear and opportunities open up for other guys just in terms of, oh, we can't foul them?
Yeah, I think you'll start to see teams back off a little bit. But again, you know, it's not like, I'll bring a baseball example up here. You know, Jesse Winker is a hitter for the Cincinnati Reds who's on fire right now, and he just crushes right-handed pitching. And it's like almost a guaranteed home run if you put a righty against him. So it's not like if teams are going to foul crew players just outside the box, it's always going to be a guaranteed free kick, because percentage wise, it's tough to hit over 50 even 40% of your free kicks. I think the numbers are a lot lower. I mean, even if you look at Messi and Ronaldo or David Beckham in their primes, I'd be very interested to see the percentages, but there's no way it's above 40 or maybe even 30. I just keep going lower. But yeah, I think teams will start to scout that. They'll see what he did against New York City. And especially because you saw two different free kicks that he scored from distance, knuckleball. He just unleashed it just down the middle of the net. And then you need to have a great touch, great finesse to be able to be right outside the 18, kick it all the way over the wall and curl it just enough to get to that near post corner. And Sean Johnson had the timing. He was in good position, tried to dive and save it. And if you can't save it, that's perfect. And that shows that you have full free kick range, because there's just some guys like Ronaldo, for example, is much better at just unleashing it from distance. Messi can do both, but his forte is always the curling close range, 18, 19 yard free kick. Zelrayan can do both, but I don't think we'll start to see teams just basically all back off away from crew attackers and they can just shoot shots. You might see that a little bit, but if I'm a defense scouting against the crew offense right now, it's essentially, well, if they get the ball to Luis Diaz right now, the cross is nine times out of 10 is going to go into the stands. So we should be okay. But this team will start to adapt. I think, again, you need to see Valenzuela back in the lineup to unleash the left side. Pedro Santos needs to get into a better groove. And then I think with Kevin Molino in the lineup, that could really change things. If Kevin Molino is the type of guy that the crew signed or expect from him, led the MLS in goals last playoffs, had a huge postseason for Minnesota, literally minutes away from taking them to the MLS Cup final to face Columbus. If he can be the player that he was in Minnesota for the crew, this attack can be very, very good this season and rival the likes of what we're seeing from New England, New York City. Inter Miami's had some good attacking play this season so far, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. But Lucas Zelrayan's accolade list for barely a season in MLS, MLS Player of the Week, first crew player to do that in 2+ years. 2018 was the last time that happened. 6-time MLS Team of the Week player, MLS Newcomer of the Year, MLS Cup Final MVP. I might be forgetting one. Let me just double check here because I know I tweeted this out. Yeah, Player of the Week, Team of the Week, Newcomer, MLS Cup MVP. And he's barely been in the league for a full season. Remarkable, remarkable signing for the Columbus Crew. Maybe their best ever? Question mark?
There's a debate there, right? I think, you know, it's – and obviously the league has changed and the way you can sign people has changed and things like that. Just a funny story. So I was already handled covering this game. I was at a rehearsal dinner, but I was watching it on my phone. And the second free kick goal, he's lining it up and the crew tweet like popped up as a notification that it was a goal before he actually kicked the ball. And I just looked at my girlfriend. I was like, holy bleep, he did it again. And she's like, wait, what? It hasn't even kicked yet. But that was just, I was like, because especially lining it up, like not many people can score from, you're kind of too close where he had that free kick to get it up and over the wall. So, you know, to me, it was almost like, should he shoot it low and try and just avoid the body laying behind the wall? But he found a way to do it, which is just remarkable.
Yeah. I mean, not many people on the planet can hit a ball like that. I mean, it's so close. You have no margin for error. The physics involved are incredible. I mean, it's one of my favorite things in all of sports to see. It is a great direct. And he gave us, even though, as Alex points out, overall it wasn't a great game, that made it all worth it. Very exciting to see. Now, we've talked about Kevin Molino a couple of times. Murph, do we have a timetable at this point?
We're getting closer is what Caleb Porter told us. They are hoping that he can be back after this 3-week break that we keep talking about, which I think would put him against Chicago on, Ori, what's the date on that? June.
That'll be June 19th, the last ever game at Historic Crew Stadium.
Yeah. So it sounds like that's what they're hoping for. You know, this is obviously a player they're going to be cautious with. We got to see a little bit of practice last week, which was the first time that's happened in well over a year. And he, along with Milton Valenzuela, were doing, you know, running and working through the stuff that's usually indicative of a player who's on his way back. You know, he looked
pretty normal moving from what we were able to see, which wasn't a ton, but you know, certainly good signs. And, you know, I mentioned Perry Kitchen earlier, he was training. So I have to imagine he's close to getting back. You know, Derek Etienne did not train and obviously was not a part of this past game. So, you know, he's a guy to keep an eye on this week, but yeah, I do think sooner rather than later on Kevin Molino, which is certainly a positive.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And ironically, we could have him make his debut for the club in our last game in historic Cruz Stadium. So he won't have much of the pleasure of playing in that pitch. And I don't know, we're going to have to plan a podcast where we just get super nostalgic before that match. We have a few weeks to think about it. So many great.
We'll finally finish the stadium moments countdown that's been going on for 2 months on the site before we get to that final game. We promise. There's only 4 moments left.
Yeah, and that's a great series. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's really a lot of fun. The top moments in the Cruz Stadium history, and we'll be wrapping those up as you say, Lori, before the final match on June 19th. Now, just a quick aside: are there any concerns at all that? So I drive by the stadium and it's like, wow, there's a lot of equipment lying around. There's lots of piles of stuff. Is there any concern at all? Have you guys heard that we're not going to open on time, or are we good to go here?
From my understanding, they plan on being open for that first game. And, you know, it sounds more and more like there's going to be a good amount of fans able to attend. I don't know if it'll be at full capacity, but I've seen – or I've been told that there's a lot of talk about this going on Reddit about whether the stadium will open or not on time. I think one thing to remember is even if there's still construction equipment out there and there's still stuff being done on the outside, you know, you can have a lot of things done inside. Maybe it's not 100% ready to go. And, you know, I think you can kind of forgive that given the last year, but I do think that, you know, you can host a game with fans and whatnot, and, you know, if the seats are in and the field's down and you have concession stands and, you know, beer tents or however, you know, I hope they're doing more than tents at this stadium, but you can make do if you have to for a few games without it being at, you know, 100% ready to go, I think. So yeah, my understanding is there should be no concerns.
And it seems all the more likely that the last game at the old stadium and the first game at the new stadium should have full capacity, because the Columbus Clippers just announced today they will start allowing full capacity on the 15th of June, 4 days before that Chicago Fire game at Historic Cruz Stadium. So this game against Toronto on Saturday will probably be the last game without the ability to have full capacity, where this weekend they're going to have the vaccinated section and the non-vaccinated section.
But what's fun, Alex, is that there's actually an event after the final Crew game. It's the big Green Day, Weezer, and Fallout Boys show. So I don't know. I see Alex up front for that. Maybe crowd surfing a little bit. What do you think?
This is probably the wrong podcast for this, but I have a longstanding belief that Green Day are possibly the most overrated band in American musical history.
Oh no!
Hot take for a different podcast.
I've opened a whole other can. Well, let me throw this at you.
These are all right.
Speaking of green, I saw a rendering of the new Austin Stadium, and it's really green. Like,
Brian, that's Verde. That's Verde.
It's Verde,
not green.
All right,
sorry.
Yeah,
Verde. What is that? It's like a shade.
That means green in Spanish. Yeah, it's green in Spanish. Yeah. That's the way they're selling.
Okay.
I think that they should have painted all the seats to look like ice cubes or something, so you forget that you're baking in the Texas sun in the middle of July after having walked 40 minutes to get to the stadium.
Yeah.
Because the light rail isn't built yet. You got to walk to that tire parking lot and sit in that garbage stadium and listen to stupid recordings of Matthew McConaughey after your star player misses another free kick or something. Couldn't pay me to be an Austin fan, man. Terrible.
When are they playing their first game?
I believe it'll be June 19th, actually, I think, is the first game at Q2 Stadium. And Q2 Stadium is also going to be hosting a U.S. women's national team match. I think there's also going to be a men's game there late summer or in the fall after the Gold Cup, maybe. But also, we know the dates for the U.S. men's national team World Cup qualifying games for this year, and I would not be surprised if there's one or two in Austin.
Which is stupid. They should have them here. I mean, we have the record. We could back it up. You need a win, you play here. It's ridiculous. But national TV the other night, and Austin was on again.
Like, and they're going to be on again this weekend.
What is going? What? Why?
Pretty sure. Let's double check the schedule here for MLS for the big Pride Blue weekend. Yep, FS1, 9:30 p.m. on Sunday, Austin at Seattle. Seattle's going to clean their clock, though. Seattle's amazing.
This is how it always happens. This is the Orlando City playbook. It's they get so much press and everybody's super hyped about it. And they've got this brand new, beautiful stadium and everybody loves it for about 3 years. And then you start to see people tail off and then the stars leave and they stop investing in the team. And then they just become one of the gang. So, you know, give them a couple years, it'll be fine. We should just keep doing our thing.
Yeah.
I know that there was a mention of the vaccinated section. I've got tickets to that. So I'm excited about that. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Excited to get to use my vaccine card for the first time and like actually wave it like it's a real thing instead of just not. I don't even carry mine around with me. I've never had anybody else ask me for it, but I guess they will be at the stadium. So that'll be interesting.
Well, yeah, that will be interesting. I thought about buying tickets up there and I just didn't want to sit up in that area. So I'm sitting by the stage in 135 this time. I've always loved that area. So I'm going to, at least for one last time, going to sit there on Saturday with 3 p.m. kickoff against Toronto. The weather is going to be delightful. This extreme heat we've had is going to lessen and it'll be in the mid-60s. The players got to love that. So no hydration break needed on Saturday. We'll get to that in a moment. First of all, Alex, you bring up a good point. As our own Zach Steffen, it's the first American to ever hoist a Premier League trophy. That's something to really ponder. All these guys that have been over there, it's so hard to win anything. And he's a champion.
Yeah, well, I dropped that in the chat when we were talking about who the best signing in Crew history was. And,
You know,
maybe overall you might want to give it to somebody like Lucas Zelarayan, but for what we had to give up for Zach Steffen and what we ended up getting, and now he's a Premier League champion, you know, potentially a Champions League winner, depending on how things go. That's tough to beat.
Unfortunately, really, if you're watching the Crew game, you will not be able to watch the Champions League final.
I know.
At the same time.
Three games starting right when Chelsea Man City kicks off. I'll be in the stadium probably with another monitor out there seeing what happens.
That is something. I don't know why we couldn't have played this match at night. And I don't know. Why is so many afternoon games? Do we know?
It's because the fix is in. It's because it's Don Garber has a grudge against the Columbus Crew and screws us at every opportunity. And that's why
don't we get to decide when we kick off
special going on?
Don't we get to decide when we kick off our games when the schedule is made?
I doubt it. I bet they have some sort of stupid bureaucracy of idiots at Major League Soccer headquarters who are coming up with this stuff.
I mean, really, I kind of like going in the afternoon. It's okay with me, but you know, in this particular case, it is a bit of a conflict.
I think there's probably a couple reasons aside from the obvious ones that Alex pointed out here. I think one,
Don Garber being a stupid idiot. That
right. Aside from that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think they probably looked at potential weather. I mean, I know this season obviously is started later, so the cool weather is not as big of a deal, but you know, sometimes in, I guess, late May, you could have cooler weather. I don't know. But I also think being the MLS Cup winners, you know, they figure put these games on earlier in the day. Hopefully you get more people tuning in, even, you know, the non-nationally televised ones. You know, I think if you look around the league, a lot of times you see that with some of the more, you know, highly thought of teams. So
yeah,
maybe that's a sign that the Crew are getting at least a little bit of respect.
Well, my Saturday works out perfectly, actually, because I will be in front of my TV at 10 in the morning on Saturday for one of my favorite events in this, the beautiful game, the promotion final between Brentford and Swansea at 10 a.m. on ESPN+. I had such a great time during the pandemic last year watching all of those playoff matches. If you have ESPN+, check it out. Who do we like? I mean, Brentford is the Cinderella story, I guess. They cool almost made Brentford. It last year.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see Brentford because I don't think they've been in the modern Premier League before, whereas we've seen Swansea back in the day with their legends like Michel Vorm and Michu, and they had Gylfi Sigurdsson too, I remember, when they came into the league. So it'd be nice to see Brentford.
They didn't hang around too long. And if there was any lack of drama, and I always enjoy the race to the league season, I actually enjoy the matches where people are desperately trying to not get kicked out of the league, and we didn't have any of that drama this year. It was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it was a hell of a weekend last weekend for all the big European leagues with title races, relegation battles, Champions League spots, and this weekend too with all this MLS action, Champions League final, Europa League final. Today, when you're listening to this podcast, I know Pat Murphy's excited about that one to see if Man U can beat the Yellow Submarine and Unai Emre of Villarreal. And then after, you know, when we get to that MLS break, I'm sure next week we'll talk about all the soccer that you can watch when the crew aren't playing, because there's a ton of stuff coming up. It's going to be a hell of a summer of soccer.
Murph, who are we losing during the break to various duties? Who's going to be busy?
I'm going to pass that question off to Ori because he's been the guy keeping track of that. Better than I
am.
Who's going to be busy?
I don't know if there's CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers. I'll have to double check. If there is CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers, then Aloy Room is certainly going to go. He's going to be gone for the Gold Cup, guaranteed. He's Curaçao's best player. Goose Hiddink is going to grab him, and he's going to be their starting goalkeeper for that tournament this summer. Other than that, I mean, there's no crew player that's going to play in the Euros. There's no crew player that's going to play in the Copa America. I don't know. There's not really under 21s happening during the 3-week break. Zardes is not getting called up. He's not selected for the US squad. So I don't think any players are going to get called up during this 3-week break, but once we get to Gold Cup, I think you'll start to see the questions. Maybe Kevin Molino for Trinidad, because I know they need to try and make the group stage. So we'll get to all that convo when we get closer. But this Toronto this Toronto FC match this weekend is a really, really important game to end this sort of first quarter of the season with big 3 points.
All right, let's segue into that. Alex, you were probably amused when the list of 40 in the U.S. player pool were released the other day. And Greg Berhalter left off both our friends Bradley and our friends Altidore. I had a good chuckle over that. I was actually relieved. I'm ready to be done with them in the national team.
Yeah, I think a lot of national teams have this tendency, but the U.S. definitely does, to let people hang around way longer than they should. We do this with goalkeepers a lot for some reason, which gets super annoying, where you have these like 40-year-old dudes who are still getting called up even though they were terrible at like 32. But yeah, I'm hoping this is the end of the Bradley Altidore era. They were never great to begin with in my eyes. And Bradley in particular has just kind of always had a attitude that's rubbed me the wrong way. Even before all that Austin stuff, like, I just didn't like that guy. I'm hoping we're moving on from them. We have a bunch of really talented young kids that need to start getting experience. I think that there are different people that you can kind of surround them with from a culture standpoint to help kind of get them up to speed. But I'm hoping this is the United States men's national team fully turning the page on that era. Leave those guys in Toronto. I hope Toronto signed them to 5-year deals, because I think they're both terrible at this point. Keep them around for as long as humanly possible and just be garbage. Fingers crossed that the last caps for Bradley and Altidore have already taken place, and we're not going to be subjected to those old guys running around, jogging around in the near future.
Well, they certainly got our attention, that 2-0 loss for both Bradley and Altidore. We're in on that loss for the crew. That was a game that really, if you talk about all of our matches and our problems we've had so far this season, I think that's the one, Ori, that bothered me the most. If you could take us back to that one and remind us where we failed tactically against Toronto.
Defending set pieces. That's literally the whole game. If they just defended one corner and one corner well, or one free kick, that game ends 0-0. And Toronto's only had one win in May, and that's against the Columbus Crew. I mean, this season for them has not been the best start, worse than the Cruz. They have less points at five. Yes, they beat Club Leon, and they're the only MLS side thus far in the CONCACAF Champions League that's beaten a Liga MX team, when you look at the fact that the three MLS teams that made the quarters all lost, and then Philly advanced against Atlanta. So they beat Club Leon, which is a big achievement for them. But even still, you look at what they've done in the league so far after losing to Cruz Azul, you know, losing to Montreal 4-2 in the opener, not good. Tying Vancouver, tying New York City, losing to a really good Orlando team last week. It was a tough game for them. Lost to the Red Bulls. This team is having a really tough time, you know, scoring goals. They don't have too many goals this season. I'm going to double check the table here to get the exact correct number for Toronto. They have seven, which is more than the Crew, but even still, they don't have their MVP. Pozuelo is still out with an injury. They've been depending on the likes of Bradley and Altidore to be a lot more important pieces to the team. And you can see that they're struggling. They're one of three teams in the East with one win, along with Chicago and Cincinnati. And you don't expect that from Toronto FC. So I think Toronto FC fans and, you know, everybody around that club is just waiting and hoping for Pozuelo to come back. I don't think he's going to be available for this upcoming weekend, but they're really, really missing him. It's just like when we see the Crew without Lucas Villarreal, without Alejandro Pozuelo for Toronto. It's a completely different narrative for how this team is and what the expectations are for every game.
Well, I expect, Murph, that they got our attention in that game. Has Caleb had an opportunity to talk to you guys yet about how he's looking at this matchup?
No, we'll talk to Caleb on Wednesday. But okay. Knowing Caleb as I've gotten to over these last couple of years, I am confident that loss, you know, and not even because of the Trillium Cup rivalry, you know, I don't know how much that sits with them. But I'm sure that sits in his head. You know, I think the New England game will. And with the way this season is set up, you know, you're going to see a number of these. You're going to see every opponent a number of times. So, you know, you're playing basically only an Eastern Conference schedule again, only two games against the West. So I think we're going to see throughout the year kind of these revenge narratives, especially when you play teams kind of close like this happens to be. And just like Ori said, the way that game went, you know, you don't create a ton, but you defend pretty well, aside from two set pieces. You know, that's just going to drive Caleb and the guys on the field that day crazy, because, you know, that point at least was there for the taking if you just handle your business on set pieces. So I know that's been a focus for them, you know, these last couple weeks as they've had time to practice. They'll have another week here to practice. And, you know, that'll be something I'm sure that they'll look at in terms of what Toronto's done. But yeah, I mean, coming into your house, you've only got two games left at historic Crew Stadium, as we mentioned earlier. You know, I definitely think this will be a game the Crew want to, you know, not only get 3 points, but look good doing it, because, yeah, you know, even like we said earlier, even on Saturday, you know, good 3 points against a good team, but you just didn't look great doing it. So, you know, this would be a good opportunity.
Absolutely. And Alex, you know that that loss to Toronto is still sticking in Caleb Porter's craw. They were able to come back and win on Saturday. He's had time to just think about how mad he had to have been at those failures back at that Toronto game.
Yeah, I mean, Caleb Porter's a psycho. I've said it before. I'll say it again. He's a psycho. He's going to stay up until 4 a.m. every night this week watching tape of Toronto. He's going to wake up at 6 a.m, drink 6 cups of coffee, and then go scream at those players, and they're going to be up for it. I'm not worried about this Toronto game. I'm really not. I feel good. Caleb is going to have those guys as ready as they can possibly be. The dude is a winner. I mean, say what you want about him. He's at least at home, he's a winner. On the road, it's hit or miss, but he is one of the most driven coaches that I've ever seen. Hated it when he wasn't with the Crew. Kind of hated it at first when he was with Columbus. But he's winning me over with trophies. So I think they'll be up for it.
I do too. I actually, as many problems, as many bumps in the road as we've had this season, I feel really strangely calm about this game. I feel really good about it. Should we go around the room and make our picks?
Yeah, I guess we can.
It's all right, Ari.
I guess I'll start. Yeah, I mean, besides the game itself, there's a lot of stuff going on at Historic Crew Stadium this Saturday. You're going to have fully vaccinated sections. They're going to have Johnson & Johnson vaccines on offer. They're going to be wearing those prime blue kits, the crew wearing a blue jersey with a blue and orange logo. It's going to
be. What's the story behind that again? Give me the story behind that.
So the league this weekend for Memorial Day weekend is using these blue and white jerseys. Every team is going to be wearing them. They're made out of Parlay ocean plastic, and it's a environmental awareness sort of, you know, initiative, raising awareness to help save the oceans is what they were saying. So we've got some personalized graphics for the game with some ocean and some blue in there. It'll be, definitely be a nice touch. It's also going to be Pride Night at the stadium. And of course, okay, it's the penultimate game at Historic Crew Stadium. One of my favorite words to use.
I love that word.
So Crew versus Toronto in blue and white. I think the Crew will come out victorious as the home team. I think, again, this team is just too good at home. They want to make sure that they close out the last two games ever at the stadium with two wins. And I think they will get the win. My prediction, I will say they're going to win 2-1. I think we see good performances from Zellerayan. I think we see Santos maybe get off the schneid and have a really, really good game. And in honor of Bart, who's missing, I'll say he's predicting a 6-0 win. Josh Williams scores a hat trick, goes to Nordeca, grabs a rainbow pride flag along with an ocean poster of some kind to celebrate the day.
Wow. All right. Well, Bart, that's a Bart prediction. There's no question. All right, Murph, what do you got?
I was trying to look this up here to see what the Crew's record was in the previous years they've worn the Parlay jersey. Off the top of my head, I think they've won both games that they've done. I could be completely wrong on this. I couldn't find who they played both of them in time. But I'm going to say that based on my memories of this, the Crew maintains an possible unbeaten run with the Parlay jerseys, gets a win in blue 2-0 against Toronto.
2-0. All right, Alex?
Yeah, I think that it's going to be a 3-1 win, and that's the most goals that MLS team has scored in Cincinnati colors ever. So that'll be really exciting and historic.
Yeah.
So really looking forward to that. I think we're going to get some open play goals as well. So
good.
It's not going to be all set pieces and OGs. So looking forward to that.
All right, I'm saying 3-0. I'm saying Lucas scores in the run of play, and the other two goals come in the run of play too. What do you think of that?
Damn, you don't need sounds Lucas's good to me.
An open play goal would be the perfect thing for this team to take them with some momentum going into the three week break. If they can't score an open play goal on Saturday against Toronto, you have a completely different mindset going into the break. I think they got to get off of that hump this weekend. It's really important going forward for them for the rest of the season.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think this is a huge game, and I like our chances. We're at home. We know what we have to do to be successful, and I don't think Toronto's really that good. So you add all those up, and I think victory is at hand on Saturday, and then we'll go into the break. So, fellas, we'll be back next week to recount the Toronto game, kind of look ahead a little bit more to the break and whatever else there is to talk about. Hopefully no drama. We'll be hopefully at Saucy Brew Works. Ari, tell me about Saucy Brew Works. I want to know.
Sure, I'll tell you guys about Saucy Brew Works. I also want to make sure that I get their information here so I can actually read this copy properly. Remember, Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus, and it's the best place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Go to 443 West 3rd Avenue here in downtown Columbus, Ohio, and check out Saucy Brew Works. And hopefully we'll be there next week, finally, to finally record the podcast in person again after, 15 months?
The vaccine section at our table at Saucy. I like it. All right, fellas, thank you so much. That was fun, as always. And we'll see you at, as I like to call it, Classic Crew Stadium. 3 p.m. on Saturday for Columbus Crew and Toronto. We'll be back next week to rehash the whole thing. Once again, thanks to Saucy. Like and subscribe if you would. I'd appreciate it. Ori, Murph, Alex, thank you. I'm Brian. This is my radio station, CD92.9. I would appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.